kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Dropping bits!
What's up, everybody? That's right, we are starting off with bits dropping because Awesome Prime, before we even started the fucking show, dropping 200 bitties in chat. This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
That's a loaded question today, Joe.
Yes, it is. Before yeah, we get to that, Pernell and Chris are here too. It's another party cast. So, Whee! Cole, how are you doing today?
I had giant needles shoved in my spine today.
Yay. Not
great. Oh,
took a needle to the spine.
I did. Oof. I took a needle to the spine twice.
Did it do its job, hopefully, and thereby making you feel better?
Well, I am currently so anesthetized that I don't know.
That means that, well, the anesthesia is doing its job.
That's yeah. Enough.
So oh, how are you doing today? Like, I'm high as shit.
That's the sad part. Like, I'm not even high. It's just I'm so numb around my waist that you could basically slice me in half and I wouldn't know.
The reason why it makes people high otherwise is that they don't need it. But right now, it's all the energy is going towards keeping the pain down.
Yeah. But the problem with it is that because of everything they did today, I wasn't able to take all my other medicine. So my brain is like floating in a fog of goo, and I can't. They were asking me questions at the doctor, and I couldn't even put a whole sentence together half the time because I one of the symptoms of rheumatoid disease is brain fog, and like you just can't concentrate. Really? So that should make tonight real fun.
Well, on the plus side, you don't have any reviews. You're the Thursday reviewer.
Thank God. Thank God I don't even believe in thank God.
Although I kind of want to surprise you and just do a review of one of yours this episode just to fuck with you.
I don't even know what's past embargo. I have a lot of embargoes right now. I'm not even, like, I'm not allowed to move from this chair at all. My agreement with D was if I did the party cast tonight that I wouldn't move. He brought me snacks. He brought me pop. And he threatened me with my life. So, ooh. Here, like, I
one
can't
of those things
even,
does not sound like the other.
I know it. I can't even, like, get my book to tell you what's not embargoed.
Here's some ice cream. Here's some soda. Don't you fucking move or I'll cut your fucking throat.
Basically, yes.
And here's a blanket.
Like, someone will see.
He's very torn between caring for me lovingly and making sure I don't fuck up what they did to me today.
I think aren't they one and the same, kind of? I mean,
depends on your perspective. I think if I were a normal person, they'd be one and the same. But I'm not.
Like, well, on one hand, you're chained to a chair. That seems very scary. But the chaining is meant to keep your spine upright. Therefore, it's love and care. It's actually, seeing it's all about the eyes, it's all about the visuals. You got to know what's behind the visuals. It's not just chains and macabre imagery. It's love and affection.
Yeah.
And chains.
I will say that there was a moment that was kind of sweet and also really sad while I was there. Because the doctor came out before they took me back. And he's like, you know, I had some questions because I never had this done before. And I'm on a shit ton of meds that really fuck with everything. And so they were like, don't take any of your medication for 24 hours. Oh, and this one, don't together. Take it for 2 weeks.
Oh, I was like, okay.
Gotcha. Not touching it. You know, so they were very adamant about it. And so I had a few questions. But then Dee is sitting there with me. And he looks up at the doctor and he says, I have one question before you go. Doctor's like, yeah, sure, what's up? He goes, how long until I can rub her back?
Aww.
And because that's his thing, like, I don't feel well, he rubs my back. And that was genuinely what he was concerned about, was like, I can't touch her, you know, it'll hurt. And once the doctor got me away and got me back in the room, he was sitting there putting his gloves on and stuff. He looks at me and goes, you know, I've been doing this for a really long time, and I have never had a husband ask that question.
He said, like, well, usually, you never see my back.
Yeah. But he says, usually the question is, how long until she can cook again?
Oh, God.
What, are you serious?
I was like, wow.
Wow, that's some shittiness right there.
That's the reason the divorce rate is 50%, guys, okay?
I was expecting a completely different, not as awful, but still awful answer. Not that one, though. That's bad.
How long before she can blow me again?
I was laying there like, you know,
what do you mean again?
The nurse had pulled my pants halfway down my ass, and I'm just laying there bare ass on the table and like covered in iodine, and I'm just looking at him like, I don't know how to respond to this at this moment. And what made it worse was the nurse was a girl I'd went to school with. And I'm like, man, if you'd told me 20 years ago she'd be pulling my pants down, I would have said you were a lying bitch. But here we are.
Is it good for you as it is for me? Ma'am, I'm not allowed to have those answer that question. I'm on the clock.
When me and her were in school, we were frenemies. Like, she would be my friend one week, and then the next she would be like, I still have a scar on my hand where she pinched me in seventh grade.
Holy shit.
Are you sure that's a pinch and not a freaking maiming?
Like, she was a thing. And so she was not who I was expecting to see hospital room. And I was like, son of a bitch.
On the bright side, you got to moon her.
Yeah, basically. I was like, she spent a little too long rubbing that iodine over my ass crack, though.
You should have been there like, yeah.
I was.
You enjoy rubbing my ass.
Massage therapy.
Get that iodine in there.
Robert in thick. I'm sure the listeners are like, oh my God, this episode just be called Cole's Ass. There you go. They're done.
I was going to go with Fog of Goo.
Fog of Goo. That is my brain without my meds. I can't even have my painkillers until tomorrow because I have to keep a pain journal. And I got to make an entry in 40 minutes.
I had actually a pain journal in high school.
That was called Dead Journal. Did you ever have those? Was that a thing other places? Live journal and dead journal?
I had a live journal. I didn't. The dead journal thing, I was already too old for.
The dead journal was for us goth folks.
Yeah, I was in my 20s when that came out, so I was kind of like past it at that point.
Dear dead journal, today I cut myself just to see color.
What was the difference between live journal and dead journal?
Basically, like, Dead Journal was the goth equivalent. Literally everything was identical except for it was very dark. Emotes were like little skulls instead of little smiley faces and shit like that.
You could have more than one, like, website.
Yeah.
You know, like, if somebody tried to come out with a competitor to Facebook, it would be shut down.
Yeah.
No.
But, like,
Google Plus.
Yeah. Poor Google Plus.
No, not poor Google Plus.
Google Plus was garbage, but poor Google Plus. They tried.
I have zero sympathy for Google because of how much shit they bring out and then just ignore. Like, I can only wonder how long Stadia is really going to last.
I don't want it to last. I still have my texting app because I use Google Voice. I don't pay for phone service because it doesn't fucking work around here anyway. And so I just use Google Voice to text whenever I've got Wi-Fi. And I just keep waiting, like, constantly to get the notification that Google Voice is shutting down. Instead, about 2 months ago, I got one that was like, you can have MMS now. And I was like, well, it's a little late, but thanks, yeah. You're on fire, guys. Keep it up.
It was not to like. But, man, I don't know. I use Live Journal for a long time, honestly. I don't even remember when I stopped, but it had to be like low 30s. I think it's funny. Chris was like, well, I was in my 20s, so I kind of stopped. Like, yeah, but what happens when technology, when you're ahead of the curve in technology, you're too old for it. So even though I'm picking it up when I'm late and old. So I don't even think I started using live drone until I was like 27.
Jake,
you get to talk to your friends like, hey, I had a sandwich today. It was a banging sandwich. Did you have a sandwich today? Just tell me in the comments.
No, like, I mean, what I meant was that I got into LiveJournal in my 20s, therefore Dead Journal didn't appeal to me because I was already past the phase in which I would have started being a goth.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was.
You're not a late in life goth. You're not.
No.
You hit your 40s and you're like, you know what? I need to wear more black makeup.
I mean, I'm not 40 yet, so that could be around the corner.
Yeah, that's in my future, I'm sure.
There's always room, you know.
Of 40, it's coming.
No, I didn't even see a Hot Topic until I was like 22. So, yeah, the goth.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No.
That is number one's favorite store right now.
Because they sell video game stuff now.
Yeah, they sell nerdy stuff. So, like, she loves the Harry Potter stuff and Supernatural. But every now and then.
It's a shadow of its former self, which was already basically shadowy.
Yeah,
I miss the old Hot Topic. What was old Hot Topic? Because we didn't have actual goth stuff.
Like the goth stuff, it was dark in there. They played metal music all the time. I used to buy CDs there. Well, we do all of our
Hot Topic shopping online, so we miss out on all that elements of it. But
goddamn it's a lot kids. Of
like trend shit that's on, which is kind of surprising. But like, you know, she gets Harry Potter stuff. She does get the stuff with skulls and stuff. She's not wear black all the time level of goth, but she loves her skulls.
Yeah, and I mean, that's vintage now.
Yeah. Like, she got her a skirt and it had like rib cages and roses, and she was just as happy as a pig and shit.
Hot Topic used to be the place where you went to go get the like giant family size tent pants.
With, like, oh,
Jinkos. Jinkos everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff.
Aren't they still getting revived or something?
Yeah. Ooh,
I think an attempt was made. I honestly don't think that
there was a conscious effort involved.
Yeah. I haven't seen a depressed kid walking around in like pantaloons in a long time.
Pantaloons. Well, the skateboard is what really sunk, nailed it home, because all the kids I knew that had the Junko pants also were skaters.
Yeah. Which is funny, because I always felt like those pants were inspired by MC Hammer pants. And MC Hammer pants would have been way more practical for skateboarding, because they had cuffs.
Yeah. So those
would
be flowing over your wheels.
Well, there was a lot of stuff that was going on there that didn't make actual sense.
No. It's important to point out that nobody that had that skater aesthetic actually skated.
Yeah.
It was an aesthetic and nothing
they
more.
They tried. They would kick the board, they would kick it like a block and like, oh, I'm done. What about the tricks? Yeah. I tried, I fell, and I quit.
Yeah, the real skaters like to carry it. They either had like cargo shorts or like tight pants.
Who wears tight pants? Skaters.
Crazy.
Oh, okay.
A little bit.
Bone dry crazy.
I blame the lack of drugs.
Oh, no. My group was riddled with drugs. I was the one guy who didn't do them. I was a square when being a square was not cool. And then when it was cool, I was still a square. And then it became uncool all over again.
But you were like a square where all the squareness was like baked in, where people were still uncomfortable.
They were impressed. Like, how did you pull that off, man? All your friends were freaking drug addicts, and you like, no, man. I was just that boring, I guess. Didn't want to bother with drugs. Why?
My brother was the drug addict of the family. So,
like, I don't even understand what it was like. Because, like, I look back on it. Like, I talk to young people as an adult. And I'll be talking to them about just the general concept of, like, you know, drugs and, like, why people even start them in the first place. And, like, think about it. Like, what do you really get from them at all? Ever. Like, they start out, I mean, people are like, oh, these are cool, man. But if you don't do them during that first session, you just watch what they're doing. You're like, this guy looks fucking stupid. Am I going to look that stupid, too? Clearly, I will. So I'm not going to bother. And, like, what about weed? Like, well, weed is different. That's just... that feels good. But even now, I was like, eh, my dad will kick my ass. I ain't doing that. But all the other stuff, like the acid and freaking like drinking cough syrup just seemed weird to me. I couldn't get behind the logic behind that at all.
I didn't like drinking cough syrup when I'm sick. Why would I do it for fun?
I remember this was like back before they had it behind like the screens and it was a controlled substance of sorts. But like we would go to the mall and my friends would just buy like pretty much go to the counter and like buy every case, not every case, but you know what I mean, every box of it that they had there. And the clerk would just look at them as we walked to the counter, like these like boxes and boxes of Robitussin. Like, what the fuck are these kids doing? And I'm just laughing, like, yeah, I know what they're doing. It still looks freaking stupid.
I never did drugs because I listened to Mr. T.
Also, Cartoon All Stars, man, Cartoon All Stars.
Yeah,
the real Kingdom Hearts.
Oh God. Real Kingdom Hearts.
Wait a minute. Cartoon All... I don't know what the Cartoon All-Stars are.
Wait. Oh, my God. What? No, whoa. Think. God, I'm old. I'm old. Yes, the
Cartoon reminds All-Stars. Me.
It was a bunch of 80s and early 90s iconic cartoon characters who all came together to convince one little boy to not smoke weed.
Okay, I think I've heard of this, but
I remember watching that one just for the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yep, and the only one that showed up was Michelangelo. He was the only one. Yeah, the others were too busy.
Michelangelo is the only narc of the group, ironically.
And the funny thing is, I would think Michelangelo is the stoner of the group.
Right. Maybe he did it as part of a community thing, like community service.
He got busted. He got busted trafficking.
Oh my God. See, they just put a dark spin on it all right there.
This is not tubular, dude.
Jesus. See, I didn't even think about that. I guess back then that wasn't even in my mind, but now I'm just like, that would kind of make sense.
Now Michelangelo found Jesus, and he's like out there building houses.
Like, I got caught with one too many marijuana and LSD pieces.
Oh, man.
Jesus. I do PCP for Jesus. PCPs.
You said Cartoon All-Stars, and my mind immediately went to Pro Stars.
Which was also in that era, yes. But Pro Stars was ridiculous. I just like how I was like Bo knows helicopter piloting.
That was my favorite part, is Bo Jackson knew everything. Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky were just kind of there.
Crap, they're getting away. How did he catch them? Well, there's a jet ski there. Bo knows jet skiing.
Also, Bo Jackson was like twice as big as both of them. What was up with that? Did Bo Jackson like produce the show?
Maybe.
I mean, Bo knows
steroids.
There you go.
Bo don't know Jack because Bo can't rap. Thank you, Prime.
Oh my gosh.
Mercy. Oh,
you know what Bo knows? Bo knows reviews, and we have a bunch that we have to get to, so we should probably dive into things.
Oh, okay.
Bo knows diving.
Bo knows the one Porsche. Thing Bo doesn't
know is himself.
Oh, Bo. Is there anything you don't know? The meaning to life.
He looks off into the distance.
My father.
Oh no! Bo
he was never
knows
there
dad.
For me as a child.
Bo knows dad. Come
he
on,
worked
man.
Weekends. He took business trips.
Oh, Lord.
My mom taught me how to ride a bike.
He went to get cigarettes. Never came back.
Oh God!
That's Nelson's dad.
Oh God!
Look, stories. It's like playing telephone. They change.
Yeah, we covered this in Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
Yeah, clearly you don't pay attention.
Yeah. See, do you not listen to the show? What? No. Who? Why am I asking? No one listens to the show. We've covered
sure
this recently.
Do. Sure
by the way, do. Some fun news for the show. We are now on Google Play Music and on Spotify. So there's huzzah. Two more platforms that people can ignore us on.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hooray indeed. Anyway, let's get to some reviews. We got a lot of games to talk about. First one to talk about is called Gear Club Unlimited 2 Porsche Edition, developed by Eden Games, published by Microids, released November 19th on the Switch for $59.99. With the vast area to explore, Gear Club Unlimited 2 offers more than 1,800 miles of tracks on the mountainside through a nature park, in the middle of the desert or along the coast, as well as 250 races, including championships, missions, and challenges. Players will have to use their driving skills to master several types of races on asphalt, icy conditions, or rally races. Chris, tell us about Gear Club Unlimited 2 Porsche Edition.
All right. Sounds like you already did, though.
Yeah.
No, you gave all the facts that I didn't know, so. It's weird. 1,800 miles of tracks. That's a weird metric for how to measure your racing game. Like, Mario Kart 8, now with 1,600 miles of tracks.
Anyway, 450,000 piranha plants.
There you go. Super Mario Brothers, now with... Okay, anyway. So, yes. Gear Club Unlimited 2 Porsche Edition. Wait, no, I messed it up.
Yep, Porsche Edition. You're good.
Porsche Edition, okay. It actually... So, what I got was... the game and the DLC. I'm not exactly sure if that's what you're getting when you purchase it that way. I think it is. But anyway, okay. We'll get to that in a minute. So, yes, Gear Club Unlimited 2. That is the that's that racing game that you always see in the GameStop and you always think, maybe. As we all know, Nintendo and racing games, not always the best combination. Certainly not the most popular. Like, they tend to get overlooked on the Nintendo system, even though they have one of the most popular racing game franchises of all time, of course, the Mario Kart. And they publish the greatest racing game of all time that nobody cares about, and that's Excite Truck.
You love Excite Truck.
Not only do I love Excite Truck, it is also legitimately amazing. But anyway, I could go on about that all night, and I may be tempted. all this to say, I've covered like a few of the indie games and stuff like that. But as far as like real, what you would call quote unquote premium games, the racing genre usually is underrepresented on a Nintendo system. But so this is like kind of the standout in that, this is the one you often see. And of course, it is the sequel to the first game. And the first game had... like, I didn't play it myself, but I was reading about, like, different things that it had, such as a really minimal online system. There were some other quirks that people, like, kind of griped about. And the second game purports to fix. So it's like, it's a little bit more of a fully fleshed out racing game. So what it is that you basically get into your career mode. That's the single player campaign. It's weirdly enough, there's no just, like, quick racing option for one player. So you get into your career mode, and it starts this story that I may have fallen asleep through. Something about how your family owns a racing team of some kind, and they've fallen on hard times, and you're just a test driver, but then somebody can't race, so you end up like taking their place. And then, of course, the game requires you to get a certain ranking in a couple of races. And then once you do, and you're required to win a race. And then once you do, then you're like, they're like, oh, this, I can't believe this test driver is actually a good, legitimate driver. Let's have this person, get in there. By the way, they always refer to you as you, and you never see yourself. So there appears to be like no gender to the driver. I think
it's open-ended.
It's open-ended.
Use your imagination.
Exactly. Yeah, you can just place yourself right in there, because all you can see of the driver is a helmet anyway. So, and good thing. But so you get into these courses, and basically, what I like about this is that the campaigns are lined out pretty well, so that you kind of know what's going on. Like, even though it just appears to be dragging you across this world map for no reason, you kind of figure out that, like, so you're racing in different championships and different, like, qualifying runs, races and stuff in, like, the A1 category. So you, once you win, the tutorial races, basically, and they establish that you're now a real racer. You get to buy your first car, and you can purchase an A1 car from an A1 dealership. And
A1 sauce vendor?
I wish. That bold flavor would do really well in this game. But anyways. However, you can actually put the letters or the numbers and letters A and 1 on your car if you really want to, because you can customize the look of it a little bit, including spending top dollar on some really stupid looking designs. Anyway, you know, all of that's just in there. It's obviously you can just go with or without. That's just a flavor option. But anyways, so you select your A1 car, and they have this nice little metric that I like, and it's basically the PI, or performance index, of a car. So instead of like just sitting there being like, okay, the acceleration is this much, and the top speed is this much, braking is this much, turning is this much, it just wraps it all up into one number so that you know this is a car with a PI of 243, which is in the A1 range, and so this is a good car. And if your car is above or below the number range that it needs to be in that class, you can't race with it. So you either have to improve it in the garage by spending some of those bucks that you earned in the races to get it up to snuff, or, you know, you can't just like buy the nicest car and then race it in a lower class and just smoke everybody, sadly. So it's all about like kind of getting the most out of your car that you have in that range. And then when you graduate to A2, then you basically start the whole thing over again, except all the cars are nicer now. So here's what I like about this system and the way they do it. Every time that you're going to shop for a car, you can opt to test drive it by doing an entire race just basically by yourself, like a time trial type thing. And you can sit there and race with the car. Extremely early on in the game, they have you able to test drive cars up to the D2 range, which will be like, instead of 60,000 CR, that's the money in the fake money in the game. I looked it up. That's not an actual currency.
I figured, but like, it was just credits.
Yeah, like credits. It actually was like Costa Rican colons, which are worth 0.0018 US dollars. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So this car costs $200. Anyways. So, you know, like, you start off with, like, the price range is, like, at around $60,000, maybe more. I'm going to say dollars because it's fake money anyway. But you get up to, like, as you unlock more, like, areas, you get more showrooms, and the showrooms are all over the map. So you can actually test drive, like, the D2 stuff, which is, like, the million-dollar-plus vehicles, like my favorite one, which I had to pull up, the W Motors Lycan Hypersport, which is a 392 PI vehicle out of the gate. And you can test drive that thing. Once I did, that thing was so blazing fast, and the controls were awesome, and it looked so cool. And I was just like zipping around. I was like, okay, I gotta get my career up to the point where I can race with this thing. So I really like that they give you the taste of the good life, like while you're over there, you know, racing around in golf carts, basically. So, So yeah, the actual racing is you and 12 other cars. Sometimes it's you and 12 other ghosts because you're just trying to get a qualifying time. And they have a couple of different ways that they handle it. But you basically race along a course, and instead of doing traditional laps, unless you're going for a championship race in a traditional lap system, in which case there's like three laps, you just have to race to through a certain amount of checkpoints, so you don't really have to like repeat yourself very often. And the races tend to be a little more on the zippy side. I found out that's because this game kind of got its start as a mobile thing. It was like a mobile free-to-play game that had like all kinds of microtransactions, which might explain why they've got so many damn options in this game. But fortunately, microtransactions do not exist in this game, so that's great. Thumbs up for that.
Just DLC.
And actually, well, yeah, it has normal DLC, but once I got the Porsche pack, then everything else was free anyway. So I don't see any way to spend extra money on this game. It is a premium, like, all-together package. Nice. And yeah, so the races actually tend to only last about 2 minutes or so for a basic race, and about 6 to 7 minutes for like a multi-lap championship race. So this is not like an all-day NASCAR type of affair. It's actually really zippy, like a pick-up-and-go kind of thing. And of course, you know, only 12 other cars on the track, you have plenty of opportunities to pass everybody up. The game gives you, on the road, guidelines, which, you know, like every racing game, that you can toggle on and off, and, you know, they basically tell you, like, they're green if you're fine and it's more or less a straight line, but they'll start to raise up and change into, like, red as it's warning you about sharp turns.
Like, and you slow also have your ass down.
Exactly, yeah, or apply the handbrake and do a, you know, do one of those drifts. Yeah, and I'll get to drifting in just a second. But yeah, you know, it basically tells you well ahead of time exactly, and, you know, I like that QOL, and it's toggleable, so you can actually just turn it off if you want and use the map that's on the bottom left side. It has music that I turned off almost immediately.
Oof.
I know that racing games, you know, have a certain audience, but I just personally wasn't feeling the store brand Hoobastank that I was listening to. So. This is a great game to turn off the music and just listen to the SML podcast.
Yeah, you know, your podcast of choice.
Yay. Anyways.
The SML podcast, which is now available on Spotify and Google Play.
Funny, too, because the buttons for changing the music are the left and right on the directional pad. And since the left stick is how you control the car, it's like you have to take both hands off the steering wheel to change your radio. While you're sitting there doing these tight turns, you know? So it's like, fortunately, you can do it while you're waiting for the green light to go up. There are actually good tunes in here. It's just that, you know, if the track ends during the race, which even in a 2 minute race, it might, it just starts the track over again. So you like have to actually manually switch to another thing or like put it on the mix and then you just don't know what you're going to get. And there didn't seem to be that many songs, but I don't want to get hung up on that. The whole thing about it as well, and this is something that a noob like me really enjoys, is the fact that it has driving assistance that is actually toggleable on 4 different counts. So you can have driving assistance helping you with the brakes, with the turning, with the accelerating, and there was something else, but, you know, basically 4 different things, and you can put it on like 25%, 50%. So I messed with it a little bit, and I jacked them all up to 100% and ran a race, and I was like, okay, this is nice and smooth, although I do feel like they're kind of wrestling it away from me sometimes. Certainly with braking assistance on, like, your car will sit there and pump its brakes when you're not really wanting to.
Yeah.
And so you end up taking the turns all like a, you know, like really slow.
Grandpa style.
And course, yeah. And of course, applying the handbrake at that point, you don't end up drifting. It just makes you go slower so you can go around the turn. however, if you do have, you know, the difficulty is not such that that's really to your detriment. If you're an okay driver, you end up, you know, winning more often than not, especially in the lower tiers. But that does not last forever. I'll get to that in a second. Then I tried turning them all to 0%, and sure enough, I was drifting into every wall in that damn mountain, and I almost went over the cliff, and it was really funny test driving a million dollar car, and just being like, all right, I'm going to test drive this, bonk, 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 and then, you know, crashing into everything, and being like, I don't think I'm going to try something else.
Your car's a little beat up. I'm not sure what happened.
I don't think this car is sturdy enough. Anyway. It was, let's see, all that.
Tell us about the Porsche content, because that's the big thing that they added with this update and with the DLC. Tell us about the Porsche stuff.
Okay, so with the Porsche pack, They basically give you, like, I want to call it Porsche Island, because it's like this peninsula with the Porsche symbol on it, that is, like, I guess, unique tracks to them. I don't know where this game takes place. It doesn't look like any kind of map to me, so basically Porsche Island. They give you, I forget how many cars it was. It was something like 18 cars that you can, like, that are now unlockable and purchasable in the game. But if you play through the special Porsche levels, they have three different championship circuits, basically, with six races each. And you have to place first overall in one in order to proceed to the other. And then once you get to the third one and you get first place in that one overall, you just win, straight up win a Porsche. And I'm sorry, I don't know which model it is, but they definitely advertise which model it is. And then you can just drive that, you know, in pretty much any race. And, is what they say, because the thing about it is that this is DLC for the seasoned Gear Club 2 Pro, because I put this on as easy as it could possibly go and, you know, turned everything up. And of course, they give you a Porsche to actually drive through these races with. You don't have to purchase a car. And yeah, it was everything I could do to muscle my way into seventh place on Damn. The first. Yeah, and then you had to do first place, you know, overall. So, you know, obviously you have to get first place in a lot of those. So it's really challenging content. However, it's not, that's the main, like, draw of, like, that DLC pack, is to have the chance to get a free Porsche and to drive it in, you know, all these different conditions and stuff like that. And also the races themselves are really challenging. So I actually really enjoyed doing the race, even though I really, you know, I spent like 2.5 laps in 12th place. And like I said, at the last minute, I was able to wrestle my way into seventh. But the cool thing is
don't
that
call it a comeback.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is that, you know, if you do place badly and you don't quite reach it, you at least get to keep your position for the next try. So you can actually kind of, you know, work your way up a little bit. It's definitely meant to be done more than once. And, you know, the Porsche shops and things like that, and, like, you know, the cars actually do show up in, like, the other showrooms and things like that. Like, I bought a Porsche in my game already. I'm not quite at the circuit where I can race with it, but I've already, you know, I bought one that I liked in a test drive, and it was really fun to drive. And yeah, the Porsches are super cool. It's like, basically you get to play the game at double speed because these nice. Things are monsters. And yeah, so like the Porsches are really nice. And you know, like I said, the only, I mean, the only real drawbacks to this game is that for one, load times aplenty. That's one thing I'm going to warn everybody about. You have to go through a, you know, and it does that thing where it's like, you know, 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, you know, like it does, like, where you can watch it counting percentages up until about 60, and then it starts to go a little faster. It takes about a minute to get through a loading screen, and you have to go through two of them to get past the title screen, and you have to go to one of them to, once you've picked your career mode, there's another loading screen to get to the map, another loading screen to get to the garage, another loading screen to get to the race. You know, there's load times do definitely drag this game a little bit. You know, I don't know enough about game development to say whether that's, you know, necessary or not, but that is definitely one that you're gonna tap your toe a little bit in this game.
Great time to listen to the SML podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. See. You can get through our, like, long-ass intros where we ramble about, you know, sodas and whatnot. You know,
or 20-minute game reviews.
Exactly. Then the tires really hit the road. But, like, you know, all that to say, I mean, I'm used to that anyway, because a lot of these higher-end games do tend to load pretty slow on all the modern systems. Like, I really haven't, apart from Nintendo first-party stuff, I haven't really seen anything load particularly zippily. And then the other, you know, the frame rate might slug a little bit here and there, but I didn't, you know, having recently played that NASCAR game, I would call them, like, you know, it's not, the NASCAR game is not that much better, you know?
No.
And, you know, the only thing that's going to be better is Mario Kart, which, of course, because Nintendo developed it internally, it magically works perfectly, you know, within that system.
Yeah.
But all this to say, I played this game for hours and hours, and the load time didn't bother me enough to ever turn it off. So I just kept, every time I was done with a race, I wanted to get into another race. And that is rare for one of these kind of games with me. I'm going to be definitely playing this one after this whole review thing is done, because I want to get on the road with my W Motors Lycan Hypersport that costs 1,099,500 CRs. That is Costa Rican colons.
Well, luckily this one only costs $59.99. So what's your verdict?
$59.99. I'm going to say, for racing fans who enjoy the Nintendo Switch, this is a worthwhile purchase. You get a ton of content, a ton. Lots of pretty cars to look at. The races are fun. And I didn't even get to the internet. So you can do online multiplayer. You can do a one-off if you want. You can join a group. And some of them actually do have an application process. You can make an online group and join it. You can do all this. You can actually do world ranking races. You can play multiplayer with multiple Switches and multiple titles of this game, or you can do up to 4 players on split screen, like old school Mario Kart.
Nice.
Not quite old school. I mean Mario Kart 64. But anyways, there's a lot that you can do in this game, and I think that performance-wise, it holds up to the standard that Switch has. I actually really enjoy playing this in portable mode. It actually looks really good in portable mode. Not to say it's bad on TV mode. I'm just saying that portable mode, racing of a game with this caliber is a new thing for me and gaming in general. There's only one other game that beats it, and that game's also $59.99. So there you go. Yeah, I definitely think this is worth checking out. And the Porsche stuff, brings in so many more cars and so many more races that I think it's also worthwhile to have. But if you're just playing the basic game by itself, I think it's worth it too. And that one's, that goes on sale a lot. So I think this is worth sinking your teeth into if you are a racing fan. And if you're not a racing fan, this is a good entry point, because it really, it has a great amateur mode, let's call it.
Yeah. And so, the assists are there to help new players out.
Yeah, with the assist mode on, it's you can really learn the game and then just kind of ease it off as you feel yourself getting better. And I really like that. I like a racing game that respects gamers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them don't.
Very true.
They got that gatekeepery, you must be a pro at this or have a steering wheel or something.
Yeah, well, I guess we are out of time for this episode. That was all that we have. No one review. we're now 45 minutes into the show, and we did one review.
Well, good night, everybody. Don't do drugs.
This is the Cartoon Network All-Stars, so I don't know.
Oh, God. Next game to talk about is called Hero Land, developed by Furyu Corporation, published by XSEED and Marvelous USA, released December 3rd on the Switch, PC, and PS4 for $39.99. You're invited to a magical resort where anyone could be a hero except for you. You just work there. Luckily, it's on an island where dreams come true for a price. Pernell, tell us about Hero Land.
I'm going to apologize in advance to Furyu, because my review will not be as long as the previous one.
I hope none of the reviews are as long as the previous one, Chris.
We love you, Chris.
I told you it was a long review. This is what happens when I play the game for 2 weeks before reviewing it.
He's like, all right, this review was 2 weeks in length. I got to cut this down to 45 minutes. That was a lot of work. Hero Land is a game where you take the form of a character, Lucky. Lucky is a person who comes to Hero Land with the intent being to earn money to send home to his poor family. And unfortunately, things don't quite play out the way he would like them to, and he now is working to pay off a debt that he owes to Hero Land. So he's stuck, and he's getting that work on. But hey, it's okay, because the player can hopefully get some enjoyment out of Lucky's plight as well, because Hero Land allows Lucky to guide various guests who decide they want to come to Hero Land for their own personal reasons, with the intent being to get the experience that is to be a hero and go on adventures. So what this means is that the park is staffed by a number of people who are dressed as monsters, which is kind of cool in and of itself. But there are other aspects in play there, which I'm not going to get into. But for the most part, it's people dressed as monsters. And they have staff meetings where they discuss the actual dungeon layout and how things are going to work out. But I guess now I think I should probably lead into that as I go through the game. So the game flow is that you'll get a series of guests, typically considered VIPs, that will want to go on a tour. When you go on to set the tour up, you go and choose a location where the tour will take place, and then you'll create your party. Party consisting of whatever VIPs are there and any other guests that are at the park that you would like to have join the party. Each party member is classified based on what they would like to be at the park. So, for example, the tank is a person who wants to, well, be a tank, a damage sponge. So they're likely going to want to use hammers, and they have high hit points. There are mages, healers, warriors, and then freelancers, which are people that can just do whatever because they're just there to have fun. They don't really care otherwise. So these people all have their classes, and you build your party, you make up based on whatever VIPs are needed to be in the party, and then whoever else you want to fill out the roster. Now, once you've done this, and you go into the dungeon, a dungeon itself is more like a series of nodes that are connected one after another. And Lucky leads the party along each node. So like starts at one, and then goes to the next one, then the next one, then the next one. And in the event that one of the nodes involves a battle, which most of them will, the way it works is that the party members do whatever they kind of want. You don't control the party because they're the guests. Think like how Persona 3 originally was, where it was just like the characters have their own free will. Same applies here. The characters are there for their adventure, and you're just there to make sure they don't get killed by the staff, which I do find kind of humorous in that it's an amusement park, but people can die there. I don't know. It's weird. So
happiest place happens on earth.
Until you die. So what ends up happening is while these characters are kind of doing their battle stuff, Lucky is kind of hanging out in the back, but he has an assistance gauge that slowly fills up throughout the course of a battle. And when it's maxed out, he can do one of a few things. He can use an item on the party, such as a healing potion or a healing spray, which heals everybody, status ailment, prom cures, and stuff like that. He can also review the monster decks, which is just information about the monsters that are being fought. Though, honestly, the monster decks, from what I recall, doesn't really tell you a great deal of information. I guess the occasional, like, if they're weak to lightning or something. But for the most part, it's just like, hey, these are the plushies they'll drop or whatever. He can also give individual commands. So he might be able to say, hey, Jim, you might want to guard if you think that's a good idea. And the guy goes, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. And they'll just put up their guard. Or you can tell them to use spells or whatever. And lastly, you can give commands to the entire party at once, like behavioral commands in the form of like the various flags. So like the red flag will be play recklessly, do whatever you want, guys, and they'll just start using all their skills or whatever. Or you can be like, okay, be careful, this guy's gonna do a super group attack, and you like tell everybody to guard at once. Now, each of these things, of course, will drain the assistance meter, and then you'll have to wait till it fills up again before you can give Lucky another command. This results in a bit of a chicken game sometimes, where you don't know how long it's going to take for the gauge to fill up, and you're concerned about whether or not using the gauge now will put you in a situation where you're waiting for it to fill up and something bad's about to happen and you can't do anything about it. Or you might go, screw it, I'll use it now, get out of the way, because who knows? I'm sure it's better to use it now than have another one charged up and the waste of time I could have been spending charging a second assist. So you'll be doing a bit of that. The actual character abilities, however, the way they're broken down is that each party member has whatever weapon you have them equipped with. That weapon comes with an attack type. Then the weapon has a special attack that's affixed to it. So like a lightning rod might have a lightning strike attack and then a lightning bolt spell affixed to it as the second ability. And then there's a party, an individual character skill, which is unique to that actual party member. So one character might have lecture, where he'll just kind of yell obscenities at all the enemies to bore them or whatever and does damage to them. Now, both the weapon special skill and the party member character skill have limited use for the entire dungeon run. So if you overdo it, you'll run out, and then you might be like, crap, I wish I had more abilities to, you know, use when the time came to use them. Now, There's another reason, aside from just managing uses for the sake of having them, than just the norm. And that is because some weapons can break. Now, if a weapon has a durability, like, say, 50 or 90 or whatever, the higher the durability, the more likely it is to not break. However, the lower the durability, the more prone it is to breaking. And the final nail in the coffin to determine if a weapon breaks or not is at the end of the dungeon, it takes the durability and compares it also to the number of weapon skills you have remaining on the weapon, and that determines if it's going to break or not. So if you use the weapon a lot, and guess what? You might be buying another one at the end of the mission or whatever. So I kind of rambled a bit about the battle stuff, but at the end of a battle, when it's over, sometimes the enemies will drop treasure. The treasure in this game is a little weirder than most games in the sense RPGs, in the sense that the treasure isn't usable stuff. It's things for people that will make them happy. So you can find these three things typically. Replica weapons. Replica weapons are toy weapons. But once you find a replica, the blacksmith will actually make real versions of them, which you can then purchase at the store. You can find furniture, which can be used to decorate Lucky's room. And just something I do half the time. I never pay much attention to. I just like, I like having torches and feather beds or whatever. And also plushies. Plushies are just cute toys that are replicas of the monsters you fight. Though, depending on if you find a rare plushie or not, that will determine if you can get a special item at the capsule shop, which will allow you to temporarily summon that monster into battle using one of Lucky's assist actions. So, if you decide, however, you don't want to take those items for yourself, you can instead give them to the actual people on the tour, which will boost their happiness rating. What's the point of a happiness boost? Well, at the end of a tour, which is basically the end of a dungeon run, the game will tabulate how well you did on the tour. And that is based on like how happy the customers are. The more the more critical hits they dealt, no status effects, you know, the more you whispered in their ear cool guidance-y messages and items used on them and stuff like that, kind of will boost their happiness. And if they're happy enough, they will bestow you with happiness points. More happiness you get, the more your character levels up. And when he levels up, he will gain access to more item slots so he can take more items on dungeon runs with him. And his assist gauge will fill up faster so he can give more commands in the middle of combat. In addition to that, of course, you'll also get Mon coins, which are money that you get from when you beat the monsters. And that's what goes towards leveling up all your different party members. Even party members that are not on your team at the time of battle will get rewards for that.
That's good.
It definitely helps a lot. Though, unfortunately, on the downside, you will still be grinding, though, because unfortunately, there's not as much as I would like for them to go to the characters, but they could have stood to give you a little bit more for those guys. But it's like you said, some is better than none. I'll take that. Shoot. So after the dungeon run, you pretty much go back to the camp. And you can, if it was a storyline chapter mission, the park closes for the day, you'll get some story elements, and you move on to the next day. If it was a side mission or something like that, you are allowed to, in turn, go on another mission. Now, the actual park itself, aside from doing dungeon runs, doesn't have a ton of amenities to it. You can go to the corporate office, and at the corporate office, you can kind of sit in on a staff meeting where the staff members will talk about the dungeon that is on deck for the tourists. So you can learn what the monsters are going to be like, if there's any particular illnesses you need to watch out for, weaknesses and things like that, which is honestly kind of funny when you think about it. It's like you got a guy say, yeah, man, my boy in there in a custard suit, he's going to poison everybody. So you better be watchful for your people, man, because they're going to get hurt. And you're sitting there thinking, why not just not poison my tour, like my group? But I digress. They'll have these funny little conversations, and I think that's pretty cool. Item shop allows you to go in and shop for items, which you'll use in the actual dungeons. There's locations on the map, which will sometimes yield events, which are just like various conversations between the characters and the staff and the otters, which is weird because a lot of otters in this game. I don't know what their thing is with otters, but whatever. Then there's the blacksmith where you can buy weaponry, capsule shop where you can buy capsules, which are, again, the summon capsules I mentioned earlier, and then it's the usual tour thing. Now, aside from pretty much everything I described, the only thing I can think of left for a general purpose of the game are a few quick notes. One, depending on how friendly the tour members are towards Lucky, they'll eventually unlock side dialogue conversations and side quests, which can be used to ultimately boost them up to the point where their character skill can advance to a new skill. So in addition to getting cool little vignettes, it's also good to kind of get their friendship up to go on the side quest to get these new bonus skills. The other thing, which I thought was the most cool, is that the character art in this game is done by the guy who did the character art for Mother 3. So if you're a person who's a big fan of like the Earthbound franchise, Mother 3, you know, Nintendo, who is not, because, you know, damn it, then you might be interested in this game for that alone. Because those sprites are really nice in this game, and they're like a weird chunky flat. Like it's almost like painted some slices of wood. So when they turn, it's just like a thick non-art side, but then when they turn to face you, it's like this really detailed sprite. And it's really nice to watch them animate, believe it or not. I love the sprites in this game so much. And the writing in this game is hysterical too. Like I have had literal multiple laugh out loud moments while reading the dialogue in this game. It's
nice.
It's quality writing. Now, here's where it gets interesting, though. So I've said on multiple occasions on the show that I hate numeric ratings, and I'm glad that we don't do them here. And that's going to apply for this game, too, because I feel as though this game does everything it's supposed to do exactly the way it should. It's entertaining. It is a tour guide leading people on dungeon tours, which means he's hands-off, but not fully hands-off. It does what it's supposed to do. However, with that said, some people might get a little upset about the fact that you don't have full control over your party, or the fact that eventually sometimes it might get a little repetitive. Like if you're the type of person that will pick up a game and marathon it, you might find yourself this is getting a little bit samey, because you really are leading the people through different dungeons, and you're generally waiting for your time to actually act and tell people what to do. There's a lot of wait and see going on in this game, and that may turn a number of people off.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of people might want me to say that needs to go on your numeric score. It's going to make it like a 5 instead of a 10, right? And my answer to that is fuck that. No, numbers suck, because to me, like I said, the game is great. I enjoyed what I played of it, and I'm still playing it. However, with that said, I do know that I need to pace myself when I play it, because I don't want to get burned out on dungeon runs. But when I do play my dungeon runs, I have a great time with it. It's an enjoyable game. I think it's quality. I think it's a fun time. And I would genuinely recommend it to people if they're on board for the same concept that I was talking about, which is clever writing, a unique concept for gaming, cool sprite art, and just a general good time, just knowing you're not getting a full-fledged JRPG. If you're getting a sort of JRPG like sim, I guess I could call it. But it's a good game to me. I like it.
Nice. So for $40, what's your verdict?
I'm going to go with the try it option because of the fact that it has those caveats. But I think that if you can get by those caveats, you will have a fantastic time with this game.
Awesome.
Possum.
Awesome possum indeed.
Deductive machine knows butt.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Breathing Fear, developed by Atria Games, published by Dragius Games. It released December 6th on the Switch for $4.99. There's something wrong about this house. Fate brought you there, but now even your own shadow is frightening. Will you stay sane and solve the cursed mysteries? Chris, this sounds like something Cole would really like if it was on Xbox, but it's on Switch, so what do you think about it?
And I guess it's not on Switch for 3 more days, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't realize it was that I was playing it before the time.
Yeah, but pre-release, hooray.
Woo! Okay, I'm going to try not be so long on this one.
I'm timing you.
Okay, so this game, Breathing Fear, is a basically... It's kind of a horror game, but it's more of kind of like a walking around, not quite point and click adventure, but it's like an adventure game where you basically have to find the right items to get to different places and do different things. All, of course, being, you know, and you're at the mercy of a kind of timer, which is unique in this genre, I feel. But basically, yeah, it's 2D. And you walk around as this person. It's very kind of a low pixel early DOS game looking kind of thing. And Yeah, you are a person in an orange prison jumpsuit, which is not explained, and you can walk up to this house and you start exploring it. All you have on you is a flashlight. All you can do is either interact with things that you find by pushing the A button or use the other button to turn the flashlight on or off. That is it. Apart from that, it's walking. So you go into this house and you start exploring, and basically everything that you walk in front of, you can interact with, and it will describe the thing for you. And occasionally it might have a note attached, or there might be a letter nearby or something like that. And with those letters, you kind of piece together a little bit of the story of why you're there and what's going on. Particularly if you find the upstairs master bedroom and sleep in the bed, it will actually give you a dream sequence that kind of explains a little bit of what brought you there. But having said, this is not a wordy story. Most letters that you find are a single sentence, and it just kind of gives you a clue as to what you're supposed to do next. It'll say, like, you need to gather firewood. You need firewood and matches to turn on the furnace. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
And as you walk around, like I said, sometimes interacting with an item will put it in your inventory, of which you have 8 slots. I think it's 8 slots. It's a limited number of slots that is less than 10. Let's call it that. No, I have it in front of me here. It's 7 slots. I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone on Earth for getting that wrong. And some of these are essential items that you might need, such as an extra battery for your flashlight if it goes off, because your battery in the flashlight is on a timer that is persistently on the screen. So as long as you have that flashlight on, then you are using up power. However, any amount of time that you spend in the dark, which in the early game is all of it, because the house has no electricity and you have to figure out how to turn it on before you can have other light sources. You know, if you spend any amount of time in the dark, your heart meter starts to go up. It starts at about 20. And then if it gets up to 70, you have a heart attack and die. And it's game over. Literally, nice. Your hair turns white and you clutch your chest and fall over and die. And that's the end of the game. It's technically an ending, too. And I'll get to that in a second. So what you have to do is manage your flashlight's time and manage your heart rate. So the ways that you manage your heart rate are such as, let's say you find those matches. If you find a candle and light it and then interact with the candle once it's lit, it'll be like candlelight is soothing and it'll knock 5 points off of your heart meter. If you come across a cat, provided the cat is alive, that might not be the depending on your choices in the game that you don't seem to, you know, that you don't know until the first time you mess it up, that cat might be dying and thus you will not get any comfort from it. But if the cat's alive, you can pet it and that will relieve some stress too. Funny enough, you can find alcohol in the house, and if you drink it, then your heart rate, you know, your anxiety rate, let's call it, will go down. You know, all this to kind of manage your health and keep you in the game. The reason why it's important to stay in the game is because if you lose, you start the entire game over. This game has to be beaten in one shot. And there's another thing about that. You can't just go around the house collecting items, because there are way more than 7 items to collect, and you can't drop them. Unless you run out of battery power and put another battery into the flashlight, that battery is not going to go away. So if you collect all the batteries, you know, so you have plenty of backups, then you aren't going to have room for, let's say, the gasoline can that you need, or the firewood that you need, or, you know, the many, many other myriad items that you need. Therefore, it's not just straight up exploration. You actually have to figure out, like one big puzzle, what you have to do and in what order. Order to get the best ending. As I understand, there are four endings in the game, and one of them is the heart attack. So, and you know, just depending on how many things you uncover and how much of the story you uncover before you're able to ultimately escape the house, which is like, once you're able to escape the house, then that will trigger, you know, the other endings pretty much. So yeah, like the game itself moves pretty quickly. Like you can go pretty much anywhere in the house. The only thing that you need to get to certain areas is just to interact with a certain thing. Like, it might be that you can't find one item until you've read a certain letter that's in a certain location. So it kind of becomes this thing of like trying to remember the order and trying to efficiently carve your path towards your next thing. Like, I got a game over because I didn't realize that I had used up all my item slots, and I couldn't light the transformer downstairs to put electricity in the house because I couldn't pick up the item I needed to do it. Because I had already picked up, because I spent all this time looking for more batteries. And so I ended up sitting there with the flashlight on, and then eventually, here's the other thing, is that the game... So the game does have a horror aspect, and this is what it is. Occasionally, when you're walking through the house, a picture might fall off the wall, and that will add 5 points to your anxiety. You might see a ghost lady, and she'll disappear, and that'll add like 10 points or whatever. There's not a whole lot of things that happen that are, none of it's scary. I mean, if you have the volume all the way up, it has this like rusty, creaky hinge sound that's really a lot louder than the soundtrack. And you, obviously you can't change that, the volume of it. So like, it barely qualifies as a jump scare. It's just, it's scary to you only because it means you're about to die and you've already, and you're like far enough where you're like, I can't die now. I'm almost there. The transformer, the electricity's on in the house, but the cat is dead. I don't know. And, so you end up doing all this stuff and walking around. It actually becomes pretty fun. The only thing is, I just don't recommend trying to beat this game in one go. This is one that you're going to pick up, kind of blaze your path and figure out like each time what you've done wrong, and maybe only play it 2 or 3 times and then put it down and then come back again with a fresh perspective on it, or, you know, cheat.
Yeah.
Because there's guides for this game because it's been on other platforms already.
But you wouldn't do that.
I would never do that. Anyway, it wouldn't make it fun. So yeah, it's a game that's like, it's a little bit frustrating, in that classic point and click puzzle type thing. Like, it very much reminds me of Sierra style, adventure game like King's Quest, where you can permanently mess up your game and you won't know until you get to that point where you've messed up and you can't go back.
One of those.
It's one of those, just with a little bit of a horror flavor, but not so much of a horror flavor that the faint of heart can't play this. In fact, with the volume off, it's not scary at all. It literally is just the sound effect that happens when you see something scary. And like I said, sometimes it's actually seeing like a ghost or seeing like a dead person, or, you know, the word die written in blood across the wall that you only see as soon as you get close enough with the flashlight. It's like goofy stuff like that, and sometimes it's just a rat running by, or a picture falling off the wall, or like, oh, what was one? Trying to think of one that happened that I thought was actually funny just because of how not offensive it was at all. I don't know.
Now, I'd imagine playing at night with the lights off, in your bed, headphones on, under the covers, I'm sure you might get the heart rate going a little bit.
A little bit, but hopefully not up to 70.
Yeah.
You don't die. But no, I actually found this game really interesting. I was just a little like surprised at the fact that it's like a different genre than I thought it was going to be, kind of thing. Because it really is more about solving the puzzle than it is about avoiding, like, you know, in Remothered, like avoiding characters that are persistently chasing you. Like, they're not chasing you. They randomly won't even show up. So, you know, it's, and like I said, the whole thing is couched in this like this 2D pixelated like colorful innocence, you know.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's some jump scare that happens somewhere that might actually terrify you, but I really doubt it. I just found the game to be a fun little like kind of brain teaser.
Nice. So for $5, what do you think?
I mean, $5, come on. If this sounds like an interesting thing for you, that's a low price to get into it. I think it's cool. I think don't go into it expecting a straight up adventure game. This is a game you're going to be restarting a lot. And also, like I said, don't go into it expecting like blood and guts and gore and like all this other stuff. That's not there either. No. It literally is just a kind of a old school adventure game with a twist. And I appreciate it on that level, and I think it's worth $5. But again, I would I would warn everybody else, you know, make sure you know what kind of game this is before you get your expectations up.
Yeah. And it's cheap.
It is cheap. It's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of cheap games, the next game to talk about is called Stretch Arcade, developed and published by Top Rated, released November 22nd on Xbox One for $4.99, PS4 for 99 cents. I wonder why there's such a huge price discrepancy there. Get faster. Stretch Arcade is a retro style reaction time trainer for all skill levels. Purnell, tell us about Stretch Arcade.
This will be the quickest review I've ever done. So, Stretch Arcade is a game where you are a person, I guess, and you are being tasked with, I guess, stopping a maniacal computer from blowing up the world with a nuke, but this is done by testing your reflexes and button pressing. So, the game has one mode, pretty much, and that mode is a gameplay style where the idea is there's a core at the center of the screen. And from the outer rim of the screen, there will be orbs that are floating in. And each of those orbs will correspond to one of the face buttons or directional button on your controller. Your goal is to hit the button that corresponds with the letter or direction of the orb before it reaches the center of the core and ends your game. Every time you make a mistake, the core will also sort of take a temporary hit of damage. If you make too many mistakes in a row, you'll also pretty much die. So you don't want to make a bunch of mistakes pressing buttons, and you also don't want to let any of the bubbles get to the center of the screen. Every so often, you'll finish a level, and you'll move on to the next level, which is exactly the same, but with more orbs and faster. You'll just keep doing this until you either get through all of them, I didn't, or you'll reach your skill peak, and then pretty much keep playing until you hopefully pull it off later.
What was your skill peak? Better.
Level 12.
Mine, I was 11, so we're pretty close.
Yeah, buddy. See you here, you thought you weren't going to have the moxie. Yeah, yeah. So, you basically end up just playing this mode, and after you finish your session, for every level you've beaten, you'll get like a string of text that the game will tell you that sort of is meant to kind of be impression of pushing this whole destroying the world computer, this maniacal computer complex tale along. And that's honestly the entire game. Now, what is my take on this game? I mean, this is another example of like, it does what it says it's going to do. Its entire purpose is to help you bolster your reflexes. And the game itself is cheap, so there's a component there. However, if you take price out of the equation and factor in time, because these days I feel like time is just as big a factor as money, I feel as though if you want to practice your reflexes and you're going to play a game where reflexes are the go-to mechanic, music games would probably be a more sturdy fit. Like that's where the vibe was when I was playing the game. The whole time I was playing, I was like, man, I wish there was music to this, or summon something to kind of entice me to try to keep this pace or this rhythm or whatever I'm doing, but instead it's just, you know, soulless buttons, soulless directions and letters. So, like, you guys, like, you could be playing, like, Rock Band, for example. You could be playing, I don't know, I guess that is probably part of one of the interesting mechanics. Like, I feel like maybe on the Xbox, aside from Rock Band and Rock Band Blitz, are there...
Blitz isn't on the one.
They didn't move it to the...
No, it's not backward compatible.
My balls! Come on, Harmonix! Jesus!
I know. I think it's because of the whole DLC and the licensing thing.
Oh, man. I liked Blitz, too.
I know. A lot of people are hoping that they bring some kind of Blitz mode to 4, but who knows?
Well, aside from Rock Band, is there... I mean, I'm sure there's other ones on there I'm just not thinking about right now, but I will say that if you can't play Rock Band or some other music game, whether it be on the Xbox or another console, but you also are in the wheelhouse of wanting to practice your reactionary times and get better at them, I mean, this game will likely do it. I mean, worth mentioning, though, there is no, like, tutorial or any sort of help room that says, hey, I see you're sucking at hitting that Y button. Here's a tip, though I'll admit, I admittedly also can't fathom and factor in what tips they could possibly give to just get good, which is literally what reaction times are, is get good. That's what it is. But, I mean, it does have this mode. It plays the way it does, and I could picture someone getting better with the React so that they just keep playing this game. The question is, will you want to keep playing this game?
Yeah. So and for $5, is it worth playing? And for $1, is it worth playing?
For $1, why not? $5, though, even if $5, I'm like, eh. It's a low try. But again, only if you really feel as though you need to bump up your reaction times and you want to a practicing agent for it.
Yeah, I can agree on that. I think $1, this is a no-brainer on PlayStation. I don't know why it is so much more on Xbox. I don't know if that is some kind of requirement where Xbox, you have to have a minimum price of $5, which doesn't make sense because another game came out around the same time, Fractured Minds, I think it's called, for $2. Mm. So I don't know why it is so much more expensive on Xbox. Personally, I don't feel like I was ripped off for $5 because I bought this before it came in. I don't mind that I paid $5 for it. I'm not mad at myself. I'm not mad at the company. I would love to know why it's so much more expensive on Xbox compared to PlayStation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like it's one of those things where, like if I paid the $5, I'm sure I'd be like, eh, I'd work with it. But telling other people coming in, that's another story, you know? Like,
yeah.
Slow it down, guys. You don't have to. Don't follow my footsteps per se. Yeah.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Pick a Pix Classic 2, developed and published by our friends at Lightwood Games, released November 26th on PS4 and Vita for $7.99. Pick a Pix is a picture logic game, sometimes known as Picross, where whimsical pixel art pictures are created by solving puzzles. Pick a Pix Classic 2 features 150 brand new single color puzzles from 15 by 15 all the way up to 30 by 20 grids. Also, a fun little thing, Lightwood Games is encouraging people to visit lightwoodgames.com/Christmas and sign up for a Christmas card from them that is filled with puzzles and a little sneak peek at some kind of spoiler. I didn't figure it out yet, so I don't know what the hell the spoiler is going to be. I'm still working on the puzzle. Quantities are limited, so if you want to get one, jump on that and check it out quick. Again, that is lightwoodgames.com/Christmas. Sign up for a card, get a cool Christmas card in the mail. But Pick a Pix Classic 2, first of our Picross games on the show tonight. Chris, what do you think of this one?
First, did you say first of our Picross games for the night?
Yeah. Tim,
do we have another one?
Tim's reviewing one later on.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. Okay, well, yes, so Pick a Pix Classic 2 is, like I said, you know, of course, the sequel to the first game. Now, there is, so we've reviewed a couple of these games so far, and one thing that I keep coming back to is just the fact that they kind of give it them all the same look, the same menus, and the same soundtracks as well, and this one is no different on that one. And the difference between this one and the first game is that while the first game actually starts you off in extremely easy 5x5 grids, like for people who don't know what Picross is, this one like kind of throws you into the middle deep end for, you know, giving you 15x15 grids to start.
Yeah, this one assumes that you've already played the first game and you know what the hell you're doing.
That you know what you're doing with Picross. Yes, exactly. So, a fair bit of warning to people who are looking to get into Picross for the first time, definitely play the first game first, because you're going to want to have that like kind of ease into this. Fortunately, I've played, but thanks to this podcast, I've done like, what, 3 Picross games now?
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of them. So, yeah, this one is, like I said, very bare bones. Basically, you can you just start the game. You get to choose your puzzle in like different things, and they, like I said, start at 15x15, and then they go up to 30x20. Yes, and there's 150 of them. You know, just straight up. And I think you can just play any of them at any time. There's no like unlocking or anything like that. As soon as you start the puzzle, it just starts. You just figure it out. Now, briefly, what Picross is that it's basically you have a grid of like I said, the 15 by 15. And so on the top of the grid will be a set of numbers, and on the side of the grid there will be another set of numbers. Let's say 4, 1, 1, 2 will be on the top. That means that from that row on the top going down, there's going to be a chunk of four blocks that have to be colored in, and then a space, or at least one space, could be more, and then one dot, and then more spaces, and then another dot, and then more spaces, and then two dots in a row. The way you figure out which one of those are is to look on the other side and find out how many things need to be colored in there. It very much boils down to a certain logic that you kind of develop by doing these kind of puzzles. Generally a good strategy.
Artifacts Monday uses those as like mini games in some of the puzzles.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a good strategy is to, like, maybe find one with a very large number, like that's just one, like a 12 or something like that, and then just, like, mess with that and use that as a kind of starting point. Ultimately, once all of the blocks are colored in, it forms a picture, and then once you get the picture, then you're done. Now, the good thing about this game is that it does utilize the fix system, which is something that, you know, is from the previous game and from some of their other Picross games. It allows you to basically check your work at any time, and it will tell you how many mistakes there are, and if you choose to, you can have the game fix them, so that you're not just left in the dark. You might, you know, you might, like, actually, you know, make some attempts and, like, get some stuff going, and then, you know, check your work, and then maybe have it fixed once or twice, and that'll give you a great starting point to, like, solve the rest of the puzzle if you, you know, if you choose to use it. Obviously, even though the game will let you just cheat your way to victory every time, it's not going to be much worth much of your money if you just did that, you know, each time. And in fact, I only found out today that there are YouTube videos showing the like solutions to every puzzle, and I'm like, who's spending $8 on a puzzle game like this and then just looking at the answers and filling in the blocks just to get a trophy?
Hey, like, some people. Okay. Some trophy people. Hunters.
Joe's eyes are going back and forth like, don't come in anybody.
No, I love Picross puzzles. I love figuring them out on my own. And if they ever come to Xbox, hint, Lightwood Games, we're still waiting. We would love these on Xbox one day.
Hells yeah. But yeah, there's not much more to say about the game. Like I said, it features the same soundtrack, the same menus, and even the same instruction cards as, like, pretty much all their other games. You get the fix system. Like I said, it starts you at a higher level than the first game did. It really is for if you are a fan of the first game, you know, this is a good additional 150 puzzles for you that, you know, are going to give you a little bit more quality because you don't have to, you know, go through those 5x5 ones that are going to be too easy for, like, a seasoned pro.
Yeah, so for a seasoned pro, $8, what's your verdict?
Yeah, absolutely buy it. Come on. I mean, these are great puzzle games, and I really enjoy them. Typically, I listen to other music while I play them, but...
Or the SNL podcast, which is now available on Spotify and Google Play.
Exactly. Throw on that SNL podcast and have a great time. Because these are some high quality puzzles. They'll really rack your brain, and there's a ton of content that you get for that $8.
Awesome. All right, one last game for you guys to talk about is called Immortal Planet, developed by TW Games and Monster Couch, published by Monster Couch, released December 6th on Xbox One for $14.99, so it'll be out later this week. On the icy surface of a forgotten planet stand ruined tombs where the immortals sleep. While sleepless warriors roam the halls with their minds eroded by eternity, a lone awake walker emerges from cryosleep. With no memory of their past, it's up to them to forge their future, discover the planet's mysteries, and find a way out of this icy hell. Purnell, tell us about Immortal Planet.
Immortal Planet is an icy hell. That's actually very accurate. Not saying it in a bad way, mind you. I better cover my bases there because someone's probably like, so Immortal Planet, I know this is kind of a staple statement to make, but Immortal Planet can be best described as a 2D isometric, or anthropomorphic, isometric 3D Dark Souls-esque game. What do I mean by that? Well, you start the game off as a guy. You choose one of three weapons to start with. Though you'll find other weapons throughout the game anyway. This is just a way to kind of give you an indication of how your early run is going to go. And you can also pretty much... I can't remember what the other darn thing is. That's killing me right now. But anyway, I'll get to the game proper. That's what matters the most anyway. So when you start the game proper, you are pretty much walking around and you have a variety of actions. You can either push B to do like a light dash, which is meant for evasion. You can hold down A to do like a long-term dash, just for running around. And you can also press the X button to do a combo strike with your main weapon. All these attacks, of course, drain stamina, so you want to be careful not to overdo your stamina depletion. In addition, which is kind of different with this game compared to a lot of other games like it, is that, you know, typically these games, your weapon will have a special sub-attack. This one is no different. However, whereas a lot of other games have an MP meter, which forces you to kind of, you know, watch out and make sure you don't drain it. In this game, the way they govern your use of special weapons, attacks with your weapon, is first you have to hold down the X button, which will allow you to do something called awaken the weapon. Then, when you hold it down a second time, it actually does the special weapons function. So what that means is that you'll typically enter a skirmish with your awakened status already buffed out. But once you've used your attack, unless you are able to make distance between yourself and the enemies, you probably won't be charging up for that second boost or second usage of it. Though, for all I know, maybe you might stun a guy, because there are always the stun enemies, which I'll get to shortly, which will allow you to get that breathing room to allow you to get another charge and to use your special. Now, enemy combat in this game is interesting. So, enemies come at you, and they have their own variety of patterns and attack formations. So sometimes you might have a guy who does like a two combo swing. He might throw a grenade. He might throw his own arm at you because you have some maniacal whack jobs in this dungeon. But they are all fairly telegraphed so that if you're mindful of what you're doing, you're watching the enemies, you can kind of go, okay, crap, he's going to do this thing, kind of get out of the way, blah, blah, blah. You can evade them. But every time they do their attacks, you can also see their stamina gauges as well as their hit point gauges. So if an enemy is attacking you and you're able to avoid all the attacks and their stamina is depleted, you can do the dash attack, bump into them, and you'll stun them for a brief period of time, which will allow you to do some combos in, maybe use your, awaken your weapon again if you want to do that with the time you get, and so on and so forth. You can also sometimes knock enemies clear into the abyss by doing that and just killing them entirely. Nice little strategic play if you want to pull that off. Now, in addition to this, you will get a variety of also tools. So you can come across spells, which are, that is a sound, like different attacking spells, like lasers and ice and lightning and whatnot. And there's also items you can get, utilities such as guns or healing items or traps that you can also equip. And they all come with limited uses as well. Now, early on, your stuff you get can just be equipped because the game is just like, hey, you need a decent loadout to get this party started. But as you come across later items, they will require you to have stats built into various qualities in order for you to use them. So the stats in this game are strength, agility, endurance, willpower, and intelligence. And you might get a spell that says in order to equip this spell, your intelligence has to be at least 15. And if it's not 15, well, it's just collecting dust in your inventory. How do you level up to get this stuff? Well, every time you kill an enemy, you'll get experience points. And there's a cryo chamber housed within one cryo chamber housed within every section you find within the game. Sometimes they can be a real pain in the ass to get back to, which is why I am constantly running on loops without without leveling up. Though with that said, the person who wants to go that route can easily just as well farm for soul. Whoops, I'm sorry. Farm for experience and then level up and then go back out, because similar to how Dark Souls functions, every time you rest at the cryo chamber, you're able to spend your experience points to level up your stats. But every time you rest at the cryo chamber, all the enemies respawn. So that's an easy peasy way to get frustrated or to grind. Both are options. And honestly, I can see a lot of people going with the grind route just to kind of, give themselves a leg up so that when they do die, they won't feel all that concerned about what they lose. Because, I've been grinding. I leveled up as much as I could for this area. Now I'm just going to run it.
that's what I do.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. This game is very keen for that. In fact, I'd recommend that to dang near anybody that's smarter at it than me, because I am the stubborn mule who won't do it. But I can clearly see how that would have affected me and made it better for me.
You want to know who else is stubborn? Awesome Prime, because he dropped 5 more biddies.
Drop it!
But that would mean he's not stubborn, because he just gave you biddies.
No, he's stubborn because he's trying to break the stream again.
Oh, he's determined. There we go.
Determined stubborn and stubborn. But thank you, Prime. Thank you for the biddies.
Biddies!
They're snowman biddies, too.
Now, the strength, agility, endurance, willpower, and intelligence that I mentioned, they, when you level them up, they will give you points in the various actual stats. So, for example, if you level up strength, well, I'll name the stats first. Health, stamina, attack damage, spell damage, your armor, and item and spell usage. So, for example, strength will increase your attack damage and also your health. And agility, well, stamina and attack damage. And so on and so forth. They each have various combinations of things they buff up. So you're going to have to be mindful of what you spend them in, not just for equipment and spell usage and whatnot, but also for your actual character stats.
Carnage dropped 5 biddies too now.
Drop it!
Man, they must really like Immortal Planet. Gee. Now, honestly, this is one of those weird, scary scenarios where, like, I was all kind of like, I might have to rag on this a little bit. This is very, like, hitting it on the nose for what it's doing. And yet, I'm enjoying the game nonetheless. I'm finding it to be fun. I mean, I've enjoyed the boss fights I've come across. Don't get me wrong, they're never truly taxing if you're really good at reading patterns, whereas if you're not, well, they will be taxing because the enemies hit really hard. But if you can find those simple patterns, like, all right, I got this now. I'm just going to do the magic monkey dance around them. But I like the boss battles. I do kind of enjoy the different enemy types you fight in the game and the way that they behave. Some enemies have easy patterns to read. Others can be pretty janky and a pain in my ass. I wish it had more music instead of that generic, you know, like, I'm in a cold space. There's some aural sounds going on with it. But overall, I do think it does a good job giving me what it gave me. It is an enjoyable run. And when you find different weapons, while I won't go so far as to say they're insanely different between each other, I will say you'll still find a weapon that suits your taste more than others, and you'll want to equip it and run around with it.
Prime dropped another 25 biddies individually just to fill up the cup. Cole, you got to help me with him.
I don't think there is any help at this point. I think we're just going to slowly watch the cup get full.
Probably.
That's exactly what I've been sitting here doing, just watching the cup.
You've just been watching the cup this entire show?
Yeah, I'm incredibly mesmerized.
by the oral.
Fill the cup. Slowly. Fill the cup slowly and nobody gets hurt. We're still going to put out a shitty podcast.
But yeah, we are. We will always and forever put out a shitty podcast.
Yep. But twice a week, every week.
Well, anyway, is Immortal Planet shitty like our podcast, or is it pretty good?
Well, I don't see. That's a trick question because my version of the show being shitty is, I think it's good shitty. So is this game good shitty? I don't know. Ask it the different way. No, I think the game is fine. Honestly, I think it plays well. Don't come here looking for somebody that's doing, you know, the Dark Souls formula differently, because they're doing it pretty much exactly the same, except it's isometric 3D or top down, you know, whatever you want to call it. That freaking view.
Magical. That's what I'll call it.
Magic view. But what it does do, it does it well, and it's fun to play. It is enjoyable. And if you're into that style of gameplay, then I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to play, have another round of this style of gameplay. And enjoy it. It's a fun time. It's not insanely long. And it's good. I like it.
Nice. 15 bucks, your official verdict?
I think it's a buy.
Cool beans.
Cool biddies?
Cool biddies. Cool biddies. No more biddies yet. But biddies will have to wait for the next episode because y'all are done. Thank you as always for being here. Gonna move on with the show. We got some more reviews to take care of. But Cole, since you've been quiet this whole time, do you have any final words?
I would make a snoring sound, but I'm not very good at making noises.
Biddies!
I'm so tired. It's late.
I guess Awesome Prime has the final word because he just dropped another biddy. So
wet pancakes!
Oh yeah, wet pancakes. Let's do that one. George?
Wet pancakes!
All right, moving on. Jacob Garner is here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm getting over a cold, and God only knows what else. Yeah, kind of. Plus, like my oldest son got Fitz disease, so that's exciting. It's called Fitz, like first, second, third, fourth, fifth. because apparently it got the name, like, because it was like the fifth easiest thing for doctors to diagnose, or like it was like the fifth most common things for kids to pass on with each other, and it was a way easier name to say, some shit like that. And essentially, well, here's the thing. So essentially it acts like a cold, and then a week later you end up with like a rash from like head to toe. But like once you get the rash, you can't pass it on. So it's like you don't know that you have it until you have the rash. Otherwise,
don't know
it's just
what you got till it's gone.
You actually do know what you have once it's gone, because then you have the rash, which the doctors like just looked at myself. We're like, oh yeah, he's got fist disease. Great, that'll be $20, please.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's real easy to identify, and yeah, so he's going to have like a rash for like a week or two. Good times.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
Yeah. So on the plus side, adults generally don't get it.
That's good.
Kids are disgusting. That's a lesson to take away from this podcast, as I'm pretty sure that Cole, myself, Bogue probably used to say that too. So that's Tim. Really the overarching, yeah, Tim. So that's really the overarching theme of this show. Video games are great. Kids are disgusting.
And we are now on Spotify and Google Play. That's
okay. Sure.
Trust me, it fits with the first part of the show. So it's called a running gag. Not sure if you're familiar with it.
I don't know.
You'll find out more if you listen to the SML podcast on Spotify and Google Play.
Oh, well, that's good.
I'm too sick for this shit.
Did you manage to get more than the 20 episodes uploaded, or
no? It's just the 20 most recent.
Oh, that's weird.
It's the same on iTunes, which I don't have a problem with, considering how timely our show is.
Yeah, I guess, but you know, it might be fun to dig into the archives every once in a while.
That's what YouTube's for. Every episode is on our YouTube page.
That's fair. Oh my god, wait, so does this mean that the movie episode will be in rotation for like a month?
What do you mean the movie episode? The one where you did your Dead Trigger review?
Well, yeah, but I mean like, you know, the future episode.
That's going to be Patreon content.
What?
Yeah, your Doom stuff.
Well, yeah, but I thought, oh, man.
You're talking about something else.
I thought we were going to have the All Jacob episode.
Oh, if for when we take a week off.
Yeah. You're like, oh, God, no. Oh, gee whiz, that episode just mysteriously doesn't get onto Spotify. Weird.
Well, no, if it happens and that episode happens, then yeah, it would be on Spotify, it would be on iTunes, it would be on Google Play.
I will be immortal for a month.
Yeah.
Nice. And everyone would be forced to listen to me.
Yeah, like they're doing now.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
It's not like you're a stranger to the show.
You know what? Whatever, man. Give me my fucking moment. Damn.
So how was your holiday weekend? You pick up anything good for Black Friday?
Shit. Okay, so, oh my god. So I got Tekken 7, like the whole shebang. Dragon Ball FighterZ Ultimate Edition.
Nice.
Soul Calibur Complete Edition or whatever it is. I got One Night Stand, even though that wasn't on sale, which, by the way, we did review. I believe Cole reviewed it, or was it Chris?
Which game?
One Night Stand.
One Night Stand. Who the fuck reviewed that one? I don't know. I would have to look that one up.
Yeah. Let's see. Crap, I picked up a lot of stuff. Plus, I picked up the combat pack for Mortal Kombat 11. Because my coworker is going to sell me his physical copy for like $10.
Nice.
Yeah. I got Sonic Team Team Sonic Racing, Sonic Team Racing, whatever it's called,
For $20.
Yeah. Because that's going to be a Christmas present for my son, my oldest son, the one with the rash right now.
It looks like Cole did One Night Stand.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I love it. I don't know what Cole said about it, but
I don't remember what Cole said about it. I don't remember earlier this week, if we're going to be fair.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. I honestly wouldn't expect you to remember earlier this week. Shoot, what else did I get? I got a bunch of stuff. Lego Harry Potter collection. Pretty much, it was just, I was just pretty much picking up all the stuff that like was stupidly cheap for like, you know, normally cost $90 or more, and then, you know, they knocked it down to like $20. I'm actually trying to go through my list right now. Let's see. Yoku's Island Express, Wolfenstein, the 2-pack.
Nice. Yoku is awesome, by the way.
Wolfenstein 2. I also got Doom. Cause their deal for Doom and Wolfenstein 2 was stupid. Like, if you bought Wolfenstein 2 by itself, you could get literally all the DLC. But then if you bought the Doom/Wolfenstein 2 thing, yeah, it costs as much as it would have cost you to get Wolfenstein, but then you got none of the DLC with it.
Hmm.
So I bought Doom separately for that. I can't scroll fast.
Did you go out to any stores at all?
Oh God, no. Well, Nothing. Actually, I mean, I did. I picked up a gift for my wife. I mean, she doesn't listen to the podcast, so it's safe to talk about it.
It's okay. No one listens to the podcast.
Yeah. I got her a Miyazaki film. I got her Kiki's Delivery Service on Blu-ray.
Nice.
John, who you know, I got him Dragon Ball Z Super, the Broly movie that just came out. And for my friend, I got the complete series of Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Nice. So,
and I didn't get you shit, Joe.
Well, that's a shame, because I got a nice, expensive gift up here for you.
You know I always get you shit. Chill out.
You're going to get Ashley another Outback card.
Well, yeah. I mean, I stop. It's the same as every year. I stop by Sheetz. I get you an Xbox card. I get Ashley an Outback card. You know? It's the gift that keeps on giving. And it's not like you guys don't use it.
Very true.
You know, am I a cheap, unthoughtful bastard?
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, at least I give gifts that you know you'll use.
Very true. And we will definitely use Outback and Xbox gift cards.
Yeah, that'll be the day when you're like, ugh, Xbox, ugh.
Where's the Sony card? I need a Google Stadia gift card.
Oh God! You didn't try to pick that up, did you?
No.
Okay, good. I have
zero interest in Stadia.
I've heard nothing good about it.
I've heard in practice the technology works fairly well, but I'm not a fan of buying games that can disappear if the service ends.
Well, on top of it, that's the thing. Everyone's just like, so how long till the service goes away? Like,
yeah. It's Google. They're going to abandon it eventually.
Yeah.
They always do.
But yeah, did you already discuss what you got on
multiple Black times?
Okay. All right. So won't cover it then.
The big thing that I got that I might as well just reiterate once again, because in between recording other stuff and recording this stuff, Xbox announced that in the preview program, one of the known issues, they're finally acknowledging that Rock Band is broken. Like, they fucked up Rock Band really bad, to the point where if you have Rock Band and a large amount of DLC on your hard drive, it lags your console to the point where no other games will run.
So what's their plan?
We got another Xbox specifically for Rock Band.
Yeah, I know, but that's not Microsoft's doing. That's, I mean, that's your solution for Rock Band.
Well, no, like, Microsoft, I don't know what they're doing, but they finally acknowledge that it is an issue. So hopefully a fix is going to be in the works. This is something that they fucked up with one of the recent Xbox updates, and another newer one made it worse. So hopefully they are on the case and they're going to fix it.
All righty. Well, good luck to them on that.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So, should we discuss Terminator Resistance?
Yeah, we might as well. The next game to talk about is called Terminator Resistance, developed by Taeon, published by Reef Entertainment, released November 15th on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99, on Steam for $39.99. Terminator Resistance is a first-person shooter set during the future war scenario that was only glimpsed at in the iconic films The Terminator and T2 Judgment Day. The machines are destined to lose, but at what cost? Jacob, tell us about Terminator Resistance.
So, first off, understand that a movie-based video games generally don't ever, you know, they're never seen in a good light. Brash Entertainment really messed that up last gen for everybody. But honestly, as far as they go, the graphics aren't exactly the prettiest, but I actually had a lot of fun with this one, and I will explain. First off, it's a tie-in, and yeah, all right, let me backtrack. All right, and the way
you're doing good so far, you're doing good.
Shut up. The way I explained this game to a coworker is like, think of it like the Star Wars theme park that Disney now has, like at Disneyland, Disney World. You can go in there. And you're just like, oh, okay, it's a park, whatever, blah, 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 blah. All right, whatever. Yeah, it's got some fun stuff. There's some cool stuff to do, whatever. Looks neat, great. Or you could go in there, and it's a big fucking game of pretend for, like, from what I understand, 2 days. Like, it operates on a 2-day cycle. Like, and so you're just there for 2 days, and you're just like, oh, I'm in Star Wars, and I'm doing this, and I'm, ugh, there's the First Order officers over there, I'm going to avoid them, I'm going to be over at the cantina, and I'm going to do stuff and act like I'm a local, like, all that kind of shit. Terminator Resistance operates the same way. If you're going to go in there just like, oh, well, it's a first-person shooter that wants to act like Skyrim, then yeah. Like, it's just going to be a generic movie tie-in, and you're just going to hate it, and it's immediately going to go to the discard pile. But if you treat it like, oh, I'm in Terminator, and I'm doing this, and oh my god, like, the Terminators are after me, and oh, there's a drone overhead, I have to hide, and I have to do all this kind of stuff. If you play pretend in the world, you're actually going to have a lot of fun. Which I know sounds kind of silly, but if you're willing to lose yourself into the game, I honestly had a blast. The story is, it's average, but you know, I enjoyed like how big the map was. I enjoyed the various quests that you could do, which you could also fail, some stuff. But it was just like, just getting around it, and you could tell that they were, I was actually surprised with like the with the geography of the map, just how varied and like how much detail they took into making it look like, you know, like a bombed out wasteland.
Yeah, while I was playing it, it really felt like it was a good apocalyptic scenario that you were in. Well, good as far as good can be when it comes to post apocalypse.
Right.
But
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, like they actually it wasn't just like, oh, here's a building, and there's a building. Like, they actually took time, like, to cave out, like, the individual buildings, so, like, they actually looked, unique, and, like, you could actually figure out, like, landmarks within all the stuff. And I really enjoyed that about the game. I will say this, the enemy AI is kind of dumb. I had Terminators who couldn't find me and were like tried shooting through walls at me. And all they had to do was just move over like 2 feet to the right. And then I would have been dead. and also the drones, like they're really easy to not be spotted by. So the enemy AI is lacking and the graphics aren't the prettiest. Like, I'll be honest, they aren't par, in my opinion, with what this generation should be. But for the fact that it's a movie-based video game, and also, like, the other big movie-based game that this company has put out is Rambo. I don't know if you remember that for the Xbox 360.
Yeah, that was not that well received.
No, it was not. So, honestly, like, this one, I dug it. You know, it's a great, like, it's a nice little open world game for you to run around and do quests in and play along with in a Terminator thing. Honestly, I've only seen, I've only seen the first two movies, so I don't know how exactly this plays in with the new movie, if it plays in with the new movie, but I don't know. I thought it was fun. Honestly, my biggest gripe, AI. And I'm not exactly a big fan of stealth, but I get why they threw it in there. But yeah, if anything, my biggest gripe is the price on this thing.
Yeah, that's something that I know a lot of people have addressed. We have to address it as well. This is a game that on console is $60, but on Steam is only $40. And in my eyes, from what I was able to play, this game triggered my motion sickness like a motherfucker, by the way. I played like 2 hours of it and my face was in the toilet. It was really hard for me to get a lot of time into this game. I'm not sure if that'll affect other people the same way it affected me, but it's kind of known that I have shit stomach with first person games a lot of times. This one just didn't click with me. But fuck, what was I saying? What was my point?
Price.
That's right. Pretty much everyone I've talked to agrees that if this was $40 across the board, this would have been a much more well-received game as opposed to the $60 that it is on console.
Yeah, I totally. Although I'll be honest, even then, I don't know if I'd be okay with $40. $30 or less, I think I'd be more okay with. So, if anything, I mean, honestly, I recommend it. I also recommend trying it out first and seeing what you think before going off and purchasing it. If anything, get it when it's on sale.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So. Cool.
Anything else about the game, or are you ready to give it your official verdict?
I thought I just did.
Oh, well. Buy it, try it, deny it.
My official verdict, if you can get it on sale, for less than $30, then definitely pick it up. $60 is way too, like, that. I'm sorry, just no, not for $60. $40 is a little bit more palatable, but even then, I would suggest under $30 for this title. But I did enjoy it, but there's enough stuff that is lacking in it in terms of bad AI and graphics not being up to par that I can't justify a full $60, and in my mind I couldn't even justify $40 on it, even though I did really enjoy it.
I don't think $40 is that bad of a price for it. I don't know if the microphone is picking up my wife coughing in the other room because she's really loud right now.
I don't hear her, so.
The whole house is sick, so I blame you, of course.
Well, I haven't even visited you for, like, months.
Exactly. We don't have anyone to pawn this off onto.
Oh. Well, wait, so then why is it me?
Because you haven't been here to take it away from us.
Oh. I thought it was get you guys sick.
No, we're already sick.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, if this was $40 across the board, I could give it a much higher recommendation, but at $60 on console, it's too hard. It's too expensive to really recommend at that price, and I agree to wait for a sale.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sure. Jacob, always a pleasure having you on, chatting about the Terminators. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Remember, folks, subscribe to the Patreon, because then you'll get to hear my upcoming reviews for Doom and Doom Annihilation.
All right. And finally, we're bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Finally, at last. I'm good. Hi. Hi,
at long last. I don't know if it's been a long one. It shouldn't be.
You never know with this show.
You never know with this one. You never know. So how was your holiday weekend?
It was good. You know, I spent it all with a child, but, you know, it's nice not being at work. I bought games. Man, did I get some games in my house. And unfortunately, they don't come with the time to play them. And I would have bought more games, except I didn't actually. I traded in my cup of coins at a Coinstar, and got a Steam wallet code, because then they don't, you know, take a percentage off the top. But I didn't get it into my Steam in order to buy a few things off the Steam sale, which is fine, because there's going to be another Steam sale in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. I didn't know Coinstar does Steam cards.
I didn't know that either. Usually I do Amazon, and I saw Steam, and I was like, oh, fuck that.
Hot damn.
You know, I'll get Steam, put some Steam in there. And, yeah, so I didn't get anything off the Steam sale, but that's fine, because they're going to have another one, and I'll buy stuff then. And I got plenty of other games to keep me busy.
Any good stuff that you picked up for the sales?
No, I don't buy good games. I got you know, kind of the hits of 2019 that I haven't played yet. So I got Control, which I started playing. I got I got Control. I got a second Xbox One controller, because I've only had one unto this point. I picked up Persona Q 2 and Etrian Odyssey Nexus.
Ooh, did you get the launch editions of those with the...
I think it's technically a launch edition for Persona Q, but, like, it's not, like, the fancy edition.
Mm.
Etrian Odyssey is the, it's the launch edition.
With the little art book with it. They skipped out on a CD this time. I was kind of bummed.
That is a bummer. Oh, yeah, there's a pin and an art book in there. Yeah, and then I got Anthem for $5, which is probably about what that game's worth, maybe a little bit more. I got Assassin's Creed Odyssey for $15 new, and then I hit a buy two, get one on recent releases of Astral Chain for Switch and Death Stranding, which there was plenty of used copies of, go figure, and Jedi Fallen Order, which was exciting, because that game has not been out long, and they just happen to have one copy in GameStop.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, well, that, you know, I had Astral Chain, and I'm like, okay, there's Astral Chain, there's Death Stranding. If they have Fallen Order, then I'm going to go in. I'm going in to do it. And they did. So nice stack of games I'm going to try to bang through before shit is spoiled for me during Game of the Year time.
That is a nice haul that you got.
It is. So hoping to, get some time into some of that stuff. And especially, like, I want to finish Control and play Jedi Fallen Order, which is apparently everyone keeps saying it's like Dark Souls, so what?
I haven't played it. I watched Ian play it a little when he was down to visit, and it looks really good. It looks great on an X as well. So
yeah, so I will be, it is the Xbox One version that I have, in fact, of that. So
have you found yourself buying more Xbox games now that you have the X?
I did not own a physical Xbox One game until Control. So it just happened. Wait, no, I have three? I must have bought, what the hell do I got? I bought something else. What the fuck was it? Was it Control? Maybe Control was the first one I bought. I suddenly have a few of them in my house. Oh, that's why, because of Anthem and Odyssey. So, yeah, now I own four physical Xbox One games, so.
The collection's got to start somewhere.
It started somewhere, yeah. A week and a half ago, the answer would be no, I don't have any. But now look at me. Just bringing more problems into the house.
Yeah, good times.
All right. Well, speaking of things with problems, let's get into these reviews.
Oh, no.
Segway! All right.
Oh, boy. All right. First game that you're here to talk about is called Story of a Gladiator, developed and published by Brain Seal Limited, released November 27th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC. $10.99. Story of a Gladiator is an arena beat-em-up where you take the role of a man in search of his destiny, only to find it in the sands of the Colosseum. Tim, what did you think of Story of a Gladiator?
Okay, so Story of a Gladiator. You can actually pick a one of three different stories of a gladiator when you were starting the game up. Just some different background for your character. And it will pop up later on in the campaign. There's three different campaigns, which I initially thought were tied to the different characters, but they're not. You play through them linear fashion. There's one that's just like Rome and African and Greece, and I believe that is the three of them. So you got your dude, whichever dude you pick, whichever background you pick, and you get tossed into, or you become gladiator for one reason or another. And the way the game flows is you get tossed into an arena match. You have to defeat, I'm assuming you're murdering them, a certain number of waves of enemies. Enemies will come out in waves, and you will win money and experience, and your character will level up, and you will pop back out to the town, and there are, in the town, there is a number of shops that you can use to upgrade your character for when you go back into the next fight. And each fight will have, like, you know, different enemies, different numbers of enemies, just different stuff there. There is a good variety when you are going into the matches, I guess, in terms of at least the enemies you're facing. It's like, oh, well, this one, you know, has these, you know, guys with bigger shields. This one has guys with spears that like to stand back and hi-yuck them at you. This one has tigers, stuff like that.
By the way, the spear throwing guys can burn in hell. I hate them.
Yeah, they're real shit biscuits.
Shit biscuits.
So the best part of the game for me is that the progression system that they have in place, I think, is really fantastic, like really solid. Like, you'll get gold, you'll get experience, and you can spend your experience to put skill points into your character, which will unlock, like, different moves and abilities, or strengthen other moves and abilities. Like, it'll give you, like, a backstab bonus and then a better backstab bonus. But it also unlocks things that I kind of feel should be unlocked from the beginning, like the ability to run or do a dodge roll. It's kind of like, you know, there's, like, some basic tools I feel like you could have at your disposal right out the gate. So you're kind of using those first couple points to fill in things that, like,
that should have been there to begin with.
You kind of really should already have. You can, you know, most obviously you buy new, like, weapons, new weapon armor and shield, which are reflected on your character, which is always cool. So you can see your character becoming more powerful. And whenever you buy, you know, you'll buy the most expensive and best thing in the store, and then the next two things will unlock to rub it into your face. you can get, like, bonuses from the gods, you know, which will give you bonuses in battle. And things you can activate. Like, some of these systems kind of overlap a little bit. Like, when you're in the arena, you will be, like, fighting for the adulation of the crowd. And they will do things like throw you money, or they will throw rocks at your opponents to stun them momentarily. So then there is the gemstone guy, the accessory guy, where you can get a necklace which gives you a bonus, like, while you're wearing it. That doesn't cost you anything. It's just like a slot. Like, okay, here, you can wear this in the arena. I guess it's just free advertising for this local artisan. So, yeah, there is a really strong loop to the game. Where you go in, you do a fight, you get loot. Loot this time. You loop for loot. Go back out. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to buy some armor. You know, maybe I need to rearrange my skills, because skills are just immediately refundable, and you can put them into something else if something is not working, which is cool. Or, you know, try different god favor abilities or different amulet, you know, whatever you need. The problem I have with the game is that, like, I don't think actually playing it is a whole lot of fun.
Really?
I find the combat to be, like, really tedious, because I'm just kind of sitting there and pushing the attack button and whacking away at these guys. And they're really, I didn't find there to be much in the way of, like, really dynamic combos and, like, the flow. Like, your character, you know, definitely feels very wooden, I guess I want to say. Like, enemies can be tough to deal with because they don't, I found that they did not really telegraph their attacks. Your early shields will not block 100% of damage. So even if you are blocking, you're still taking damage, which is kind of annoying. And yeah, that was, like, kind of my issue, was, like, actually, like, you know, buying stuff and, like, going through, like, the town stuff and building up my character was cool. But then it's like, I'd get into the arena, and it's like, okay, I got my shiny new sword, but it still just kind of felt the same, only I'm doing a little more damage. Like, even, like, when I went for a big sword upgrade and I went in there, like, oh, I'm going to kick these guys' ass. And it was just kind of like, okay, it just didn't, like, feel any better. There's only the one attack button. You do unlock other abilities to be able to jump and roll and get backstab bonuses and other stuff.
Jump attack, the uppercut.
There is stuff that you unlock, but I didn't really, it didn't add a ton of variety to the game for me. And one thing that drove me nuts. So there is button customization in this game, but for some reason, like, mapping something to R is forbidden. Like, I don't, like, I really, early on, I was trying to, like, have my run up on R2, or RZ, as the case may be, on your Switch. And I was trying to put block up on R, and, like, for whatever reason, like, you can't map stuff to R. I don't know why.
Yeah, I tried remapping stuff on the Xbox as well, and I just kind of figured that rebinding keys didn't work for some reason.
Oh, yeah, it worked, but it just had that, like, one limitation where for some reason you couldn't bind things to R, and it really confused me. The game is pretty nice looking. I think it's got a, you know, like a 2D art style there, like the character models, like, look good, nice and clean. Everything looks nice and clean in this game. Like, there's nothing that looks rough around the edges. But yeah, for me, just playing it was just a bore.
That's a bummer, because I honestly enjoyed my time with this one. I would find myself going back, grinding battles. I do have a couple of nitpicks with the game. Like, I wish after you won a battle, it would either let you move on to the next battle without going back to town.
Yeah, or that's
replay
annoying.
The battle that you just did so you could get more stars.
Because it does a little loading animation in and out of the arena each time.
Yeah, it would have been nice to just be able to jump on to the next fight or replay the one you just did if you only got, like, one star and you want to try again, instead of having to go back to town and then go back in and reselect it. I found the combat to be fairly enjoyable. It is simplistic, but I enjoyed the simplicity of it. I enjoyed being able to do dodge rolls behind someone and then uppercut their fucking head off, which was really cathartic, especially with how dickish some of those enemies could be later on. Like, to uppercut a spear thrower's head off makes my day. It makes me smile. I do wish the hit detection was a little bit better. It seems like enemies hit you far easier than you can hit them. Yes,
they do. And on, like, a more... because the game is all 2D, so, like, I felt like an enemy, like, sliding up from a lower plane would be able to hit me. Like, they would be able to hit me, and I wouldn't be hitting them.
Yeah.
Like, their vertical hitbox is, like, a bit bigger than yours is.
Yeah, and then my last real major gripe is there's no subtitles in the game. So they have story sequences, no subtitles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, because when I first started it up, like, I think I was in bed and I had the sound down. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just going to have to do this tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, but overall, $10.99 on this one. I personally give it a try. I think it's fun. I think it's enjoyable, and it's fairly cheap for what it is, and I don't have a problem with it. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd put it on, like, the low end of a try it. The progression, all the pieces for progressing are right there. I just don't feel like the beat-em-up action is all that interesting, but is definitely significantly better than, say, that River City side story game I reviewed, like, a couple weeks ago. Like, this is way better than that. I would much rather spend more time with Story of a Gladiator. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. I feel like I wish the combat had a bit more going on with it and was a bit more responsive, but it's aight.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Marvelous Animals, developed by Mode Studio, published by Badland Publishing, released November 22nd on the Switch for $4.99. Marvelous Animals is a fun and cute adventure in which you'll be in charge of leading these chubby animals to their home. Tim, tell us about it.
Shit, bad time to drink water. Marvelous Animals. Yeah, I thought this would be a fun game to play alongside my child. So, you know those, like, little, like, wooden puzzle box things with, like, a dial on each side and there's a marble in them and you have to, like, carefully guide the marble through a maze without it falling down a hole? That's Marvelous Animals. That's what this game is. Except it's African-themed. So the marbles are marbleized animals, and yeah, the boards kind of have a savanna theme to them. So you have your marble, which you need to balance and guide into the hole. Now, this game is motion control only. It relies solely on the gyro in your controller to move the stage and guide the marble into the hole. There is no option to just, like, use sticks. There is no option to change the sensitivity of the gyro. It just do what it gonna do. I will say playing it in portable mode, with the Joy-Con strapped on, it seemed to be less sensitive, which it would fucking need to be, for you to be able to see the screen while you're doing this. But still, like, I'm not a big fan of having to tilt the screen that I'm holding because it makes it tougher to see.
Yeah.
Either way. So, yeah, you have these levels, and you have about 40 of them in total. They're divvied up between North Africa and South Africa. So you'll go into a level, and when you get into the level, it presents you with, like, a few different goals beyond just, like, you know, finish the level, which is, you know, collect a certain amount of coins, get a certain number. Sometimes levels, many levels, will have more than one ball, more than one animal ball in it. The animal it decides to put in the level is random. It pulls it from a pool that you will unlock as you go. And yeah, collect coins. What's the other one? Probably one that's like take no damage or something like that. I'm trying to remember what the other, yeah, there's like time-based ones. There's like collecting coins. There's like getting a certain number of balls through the holes, to the goal. And unlocking those, and you need to get those stars. You need to get those stars in order to unlock South Africa. You need 45 stars to unlock South Africa. We'll get to that in a second.
Out of how many stages?
Out of like 20. So it's like you got to get 45 out of like 60. And it, like, I mean, really, I ended up having to go back and replay levels to unlock more of them to get more stars. But like for the ones where it's like, oh, I just need to get it in like 5 seconds. In that case, I just like wouldn't. I have to get one ball through the hole. Okay, I'm just going to flip this freaking thing and send one ball down into the hole. And like sometimes there's a ball that just starts near the hole. Like it's weird. Like it doesn't really, the game doesn't really put a lot of goals in place that's like, oh, make sure all four of your balls make it in the hole. Like I just kind of did that instinctively, but then I found out it doesn't really fucking matter. In most cases, it just wants you to get one through there, which is weird. But yeah, there's coins around which you use, you can pick up the coins which you need to buy more animals with. Some levels will have hazards, like little spike hazards, and the hit detection on those is real bad. Like, they will just do damage. It's not a one-hit kill. I think you get, like, 3 or 4 hits, but, like, just kind of breezing by them will sometimes enter the danger zone, and, like, you'll just be taking damage, and it's not good. Like, it really, that does not feel good. And, like, the first time it happened, I was like, wait, what? Wait, I wasn't even close to the thing, but I just wandered close enough. It wasn't like I banged into one. I mean, if you bang into one, you take damage, but sometimes you just breeze by and you take damage from them. And then, you know, if your marble dies, you start the level over. So yeah, as I mentioned, as you play levels, you will unlock the ability to purchase more animals in the shops. Like you start out with like a cheetah and a gazelle, and you will purchase, you know, the majestic lion. There are lemurs, elephants, alligators, you know,
all nice.
Many animals. I believe I was told in the write-up for this game that there would be animal facts involved, and I don't remember seeing any animal facts or any, I don't think I learned anything about animals while playing this game. So anyways, I mentioned you have to unlock a certain amount of stars to unlock, South Africa. So the game can't fucking count. Like, it is actually busted in this way. Like, I did not get South Africa to unlock until I had about 49 stars.
Huh.
And, like, it wasn't registering. Like, there were some levels where I'd finish, and I would show me all 3 stars on the completion screen, and I would go back to the menu, and it would only show me, like, 1 or 2. And I was weird. Like, yeah, like, actually not functioning properly. And it was just like, okay, all right. So just actually, you know, had to go through and keep unlocking more stars until finally it was like, oh, you're at 45 and let me go on. I mean, the stages in South Africa aren't wildly different. It's pretty much the same stuff. Yeah. And I did give my kid a shot at the game. I gave him the controller on the easiest level and he tried a few times. And he's like, no, this is too hard. He's 4.5. So he's still a little young playing games, but he could not. He seems like he would be at the bottom, like somewhere around the target demographic for this game, and he was like, eh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hit detection aside, which sounds like a pretty big issue, and math as well. $5 on this one doesn't seem like much. What are your thoughts?
Nah, deny it. I mean, like, even for $5, I'm just like the ways in which it is broken. I mean, unless you really are into that style of puzzle, like, then there will probably be enough content and interest there. But I just, like, I really wish what it had was, like, a bumper mode, like, for kids, where they would put bumpers around the edge of the areas so that your ball wouldn't fall off. And that way, you know, just they could, you know, a younger kid could just, you know, they could manage, and, yeah, have fun, and in a decent amount of time, finish the level. But despite being, like, seemingly aimed at kids, there is, like, no option for that, and it just seems like it would be tough, you know, when you can't say, oh, use the sticks, when you can't adjust the sensitivity of the gyro, like, you're not making it accessible for them to play. So
did this play better with just one Joy-Con? I'm assuming you played it with just one Joy-Con tilting it, or does it play better in handheld?
When I was playing on TV.
You can use a Pro controller as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a gyro in it. I felt it felt better, like the sensitivity felt better using the one Joy-Con in portable mode, and maybe that would be better on the TV. I didn't try that specifically. Seemed a little less sensitive, but maybe that's just in my head. I don't know.
No, I didn't play it, so I'm not too sure, like, how exactly it plays. To me, this seems like something that would be better just holding it in your hand and tilting it that way, just
with
playing it in handheld mode. I haven't played it myself, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, playing it in full handheld is probably the worst way to play it, but hey, you never know. But yeah, I mostly played it on the TV. That was where most of my experience came from, and I was like, I'll play a little bit in portable mode just to see what it feels like, or if it, you know, did something. So it only looks at the left Joy-Con, which was confusing to me because I had the my Hori D-pad one in there, and I just didn't know what was wrong. I'm like, why is the game just not working? And it wasn't telling me.
Oh, well, one final game to talk about tonight is called Nonagrams Prophecy, developed and published by No Gravity Games, released November 22nd on the Switch for $3.99. Over 380 challenging puzzles in three different game modes, from beginners to expert, solve tricky puzzles approved by the ancient gods. Develop your brain skills using logic and reasoning. Tim, tell us about this one.
All right, guys, you like Picross because it's that. That's what it is. It's a Picross game.
So this is our second Picross game, or Picross, or however you say it, Picross.
Picross, as it were.
Yeah, second one. So how's this one?
On this show?
Yeah.
On this episode? Yes. I don't know, how was the other one? What was the other one?
The other one was Pick-A-Pix Classic 2.
Oh, cool. Was it good?
Yes.
I have the episode. Okay, cool.
Yeah, Lightwood does solid games.
It's kind of hard to, you know, do one of these games bad if, like, this is what you're looking for. Nonagrams Prophecy, it's a logic puzzle game. There's a grid, there's numbers along the side, which give you clues as to how many of the, blocks in a particular line need to be filled in. And when you fill them all in, you get a picture as your reward. And it's fun. It's a great style of game, going back to Picross on the original Game Boy. Obviously, Picross DS was fantastic. Picross 3D is incredible. Picross 3D Round 2 is even better. Just amazing top shelf games. This is just, you know, a simple $4 2D Picross game. So what this game gives you is you have, you know, a ton of puzzles that are just kind of that basic what you expect Picross style, in that it's just like, okay, here's the numbers, here's the grid. Okay, the second mode involves color, which is, you know, not the biggest big breakthrough in these games, but it's nice that it's there. I haven't played like a ton that have a color focus on them. So on the grid, what it'll tell you is like, okay, well, this row has, you know, one blue block, three green blocks, one blue block on the other side. So it does it like that. So now you also have to fill it in with proper color, as well as getting the right number of blocks in a line. To the game's detriment, there is no colorblind mode that I could see. And that would make this mode very difficult for someone who has suffers from colorblindness. And it was difficult for me sometimes as someone who is not colorblind, just because sometimes the shades were very close together. Like one of the first color puzzles, one with like a couple shades of brown that were very close together. And I kind of had to like lean in and squint just to be like, oh, wait, okay, there are different shades. That is what I'm doing wrong. But yeah, ton of color puzzles. Also cool. And then the final mode is called Big Picture Mode. No, it's not like Steam Big Picture Mode, but this is where you solve a bunch of smaller puzzles that are pieces to a larger puzzle. Mm-hmm. Again, something that, well, they did it in Picross. Yeah. In one of the other Picross games. But yeah, and there's fewer of those, I guess. Well, I think there's 9 big pictures in total, and those are broken down amongst, you know, a bunch of smaller puzzles. So yeah, the game is pretty solid. Like, there is touchscreen support. I kind of jumped back and forth between them. Like, it was easier for me to kind of hold my system with one hand, to hit some of the shortcuts for like changing colors or, you know, changing to X out, a square rather than just like swiping on those. But yeah, it has touchscreen support, which not every Switch game takes advantage of, unfortunately. Yeah, and it has like a lot, you know, it's a bunch of puzzles and it's $4. I mean, it has a Grecian, like, a Greek god theme to it, which is not terribly relevant to anything in the game. It's just, that's the trimming of it. It's just, that's the trimming around how it feeds the puzzles to you. So yeah, you have those 3 puzzle styles. There's a bunch of puzzles. It's solid. It's fun. It's $4. I mean, of course,
it's hard to fuck up Picross.
It is hard too, but it has, you know, other than the lack of a colorblind mode, it has all the features there that I think you would want to play this game.
So your overall verdict at $4?
Yeah, that's a buy. And it was on sale for like $3 over the weekend. I don't know if it still is. Might be as of this recording. I don't know.
Well, that's something to keep an eye on. Even if it's not, it's $4. You could afford $4.
You will get your time out of this game for $4 for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to grab this one. I love my shit. Picross. What'd you do?
I just dropped some pens on the floor. It's okay. It's not a disaster.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone who came on and did their thing. Tim, thanks to you as well for being here. I hope you enjoy your treasure trove of Black Friday video game goodness.
Me too.
Do you have any final words to end the show?
Yeah, just, you know, some rough games, I guess, for me. But, you know, there is Nonogram's Prophecy, which is very fun, even if it is by the numbers.
Oh, God damn you.
Ah.